you two are queens. And so what happens is princesses look up to queens. I mean, that's really how it should be. And so that kind of beautiful, strong, fierce, but loving leadership is needed, especially among women. We don't need to be men to be powerful leaders. We need to act like fierce, kind, loving, clear women.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes everything sexy again.
I'm Gina Tremarco, sales trainer and consultant to Pivot 10 Results and founder of Carolina Improv, the number one nightlife attraction in Myrtle Beach on TripAdvisor since 2010.
And I'm Rachel Pitts. I'm a mommy and a wifey and now a dog mom too, like Gina. And I'm a realtor turned mortgage loan officer with U.S. Mortgage. Super cool episode today. You just never know what you're going to get with us. And this one's a good one.
Another good one. They're all so good. They're all so different. And Beth comes to us from Tina Clements, who was a previous guest, because Tina is very involved in an organization called Durga, Durga Tree International, which helps deal with human trafficking. And so we thought that was important to bring her on the show today. And she's super cool because she's done this great job of interconnecting her philanthropy with her business of helping women. So I think that's super cool. That totally resonated with me, especially the fact that she calls herself a queen maker.
I like it.
So we'll talk more about that. A little bit about Beth. Beth Tiger has been a queen maker for over 15 years. Through her books, workshops, retreats, and spiritual wellness brand, she has equipped women with the tools they need to reclaim their crown and step into the role of queen of their own life. The central idea of her work is that every person is a divine being and already has what they yearn for within them. Through her various roles and businesses, she loves creating opportunities for people to awaken to their incredible potential. Beth believes empowered women empower women. That to me was one of the most powerful things. I love that phrase. Each of her clients becomes an angel to another as a portion of all of Beth's endeavors goes toward funding programs through Durga Tree International to empower survivors of abuse and modern slavery to become thrivers through education and job training. In 2006, Beth created the Flying Solo series, and from this work, she authored the Balboa best-selling workbook, Rise from the Ashes of Divorce. With her firm belief that service is a critical part of a joy-filled life, in 2013, Beth founded Durga Tree International, a nonprofit that empowers survivors of human trafficking and abuse through education, job training, and emotional healing. Along with her many other professional roles, Beth is now the executive director of this incredible organization that has already helped hundreds of survivors become thrivers. Super cool.
You guys will love this.
Yeah, I think you're going to love this and you're going to love her. And get your crowns out. Get your crowns out to listen. Even if you're a man, you could wear a crown. You could be the king. So let's get on to this episode with Beth Tiger. Hey, Liz, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About. Hopefully you've listened to a show or two and you have been warned about what to expect with us.
I have.
Awesome. Perfect, because you still agreed to come on. So you are our kind of woman. You're probably most likely a woman your mother warned you about. And we want to ask you about that, but I changed this up a little bit because I was stalking your website and I love it, by the way. I was watching all kinds of stuff and reading all kinds of stuff about you, but you have on your homepage basically that you're a self-proclaimed bitch.
You bet.
Can you break that down for us? Because I know there's a breakdown to that.
Well, you know, the word bitch has a negative connotation, and I think that a lot of women don't even realize that a lot of the negative names that we call one another or that we're called are related to powerful feminine aspects in the world and also to our physical body types. So a bitch, fierce, alpha female dog, and yet protective, leader. And yet when we're talking to one another, we're like, oh yeah, you're such a bitch. And I decided that I was going to take back those names. And so I decided to reclaim my inner bitch. And I break it down like I am either bold or beautiful. I'm intelligent. I'm inspirational. I'm talented and tenacious. I'm compassionate. And then I have a great sense of humor and I'm hot. when I talk to women about that and I'm like, you know, if you reclaimed your inner bitch, how would you describe her? It's pretty amazing to see women step into a power they know already exists inside of themselves, but they have shame around it. You know, we're like, oh, I shouldn't be bitchy. Well, why not? Why not? You know, like I said, the alpha female she's fierce and clear and kind, and she's a leader, and she'll take out what needs to be taken out for the sake of her community and her young ones.
I think the combination of that and your last name, Tiger, I mean, it doesn't get more fierce than that.
Nope. You know, I was talking to my two of my children the other day, and I had seen a post on Facebook or somewhere, and I thought it was so cool. And it said, tell your love story in 3 words. And so I was asking the kids, and they were thinking just a romantic love story. And I had really thought about that post when I saw it. And I said to them, they're like, well, what's yours? And I said, I love fiercely. That's my love story.
I love that.
Tiger, tiger, roar.
That's a really great question. What's your love story?
Yeah. Even when you think about your love story for the world, like what is that? Like, how do you love the world? How do you love other people? And fiercely, by the way, means I make mistakes too. You know, when you're fierce, sometimes you can speak and then wish that what came out of your mouth didn't, you know, but that roar can get you into trouble. Rare, you know, so.
But right, Rachel, that never happens to us.
Yes, on a regular basis. This whole thing's the bitch thing's making me think of, I had a challenging client once who told me I was a bitch. And at that moment, I just kind of pushed through it. And then eventually got the business done with her. And then we sort of laughed about it later because I said, yeah, you remember when you called me a bitch? And she said, yeah, I'm sorry about that. And I said, no, I actually take ownership of that because I am a bitch. I'm a bitch that gets shit done.
That's right.
And she was right. You are. And I was like, I don't hold it against you. It was actually kind of an interesting moment.
Exactly. And you know, to use words of power against women, it's that shaming one another that we do, you know. The only English word for a wise woman is witch. And when we think of witch, most of us are like, oh, it's bad. But again, it's wise woman. It's another powerful word for a woman, and we're afraid of that. And that's great. That's great marketing for hundreds, if not thousands of years by a patriarchal system. And I love men, but that is the truth around a lot of that.
Is that really true, that that's the only word for wise woman?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know if we can say this on your podcast, but I'm just
you can say anything.
Okay. So the word cunt means vagina in German. And yet it's the worst thing we can call each other. Well, I don't know that that's the seed of creation and power for women. So let's make that a negative thing. And let's make that shaming and not powerful. So when you think about the words, like, you know, when we call a man weak or we call somebody weak, we call them a pussy. Like, so it's all around the divine feminine or the powerful female. So I just think it's fascinating. And I think we have to take back our language.
Oh, Rachel, you know what we want to ask her next, don't you?
Sure do, because there's we are huge proponents. We are huge supporters of Regina Thomas Hour's book called Pussy. And I actually have some friends who are having trouble with it because I'm like, how can you not love your pussy? Like, why do you not love that word? And they just are so like, oh God, I can't believe it. I'm like, you don't understand the power. Now, granted, they're half my age, but I'm like, one day you'll figure out the power of what you are and who you are, and you won't feel shame around that part of you. Like, It's Amen. What rules the world.
It sure is, isn't it? It's, you know, it's what drives so much.
And just hearing you speak, I'm guessing that you're familiar with Mama Gina and Pussy Reclamation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The way you're speaking, like her language almost verbatim. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. I met somebody who was really involved with her. And when we were chatting, we were at a retreat, and it was called Women at Woodstack. And she was like, "Do you know who Mama Gina is?" And I didn't. And she was like, "Oh," and I have not, you know, done anything with her or taken any classes with her, but I've heard that we really have the same vibe in terms of.
Yeah, you do. Have you read the book?
No.
That's crazy to me, because the way you speak is as if you've read her book. That's probably why someone said. The book is called Pussy, A Reclamation.
All right, I got to write this down.
Yeah. Buy it now.
This is the second time I've heard it. This is the second time I've heard it. So I'm like, I've got to write this down.
It's pretty powerful, and it's pretty much in alignment with everything that you're saying. That's why I was like, gosh, you must be part of her tribe.
No, but maybe I should become part of her tribe.
You should be. She's in the New York area.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. When I was talking to this gal at this retreat, she was like, "Oh, you'd really love her." So this is the second time I'm hearing it. If I hear something two or three times, I feel like it's the universe going, "Hey, hey."
Yeah, the universe is talking. So I guess it's going to be safe to say, because we like to ask this question, which we probably don't need to, but do you consider yourself a woman your mother warned you about, or someone else's mother?
I think I'm a woman that a lot of people warn each other about. But when I think about my mom, yeah, initially I was really conflicted. I grew up in a Catholic household. My mother was deeply spiritual. I was as a kid too. And then I realized as a teenager, I just couldn't get in sync with a philosophy that really, you know, put one of the most badass women in their story on a pedestal, and she could only wear blue and she was a virgin, you know, like it just didn't, she didn't relate to me. And then when I started really looking at her, I was like, she's not some weakling. I mean, this is a refugee, an unwed mother. This is a widow. This is a badass who could sit and bear witness to the death of her child. Like, she's not some weakling. And it just, I remember my mother and I having huge debates about it. And so, yeah, I became the woman, like my mother was always like, "Oh, don't leave this tradition," or what, you know, "I'm divorced a few times. This is my third marriage." You know, third time's a charm. It took me a while to get it right. But so yeah, I did all the things my mother didn't want me to do. Got out of college and said, "I'm going to become a massage therapist." She was like, "What?" Like in the early 90s, she was like, "That's for prostitutes." I'm like, "No, it's not." But so yeah, I was definitely, I didn't really fit the mold, but I will say my mother was pretty incredible and open. And by the time I was entering into my early 30s, she was really just embracing the fact that I had found my own path back to the divine.
There you go.
How would you describe a woman your mother warned you about? Like, what would be the description?
Well, first of all, she wasn't Catholic. So she had sex outside of marriage. She liked to go dancing and go to the bars. She was fearless. She traveled, so she wasn't afraid. She wasn't worried about her safety. She made friends outside of her family tribe. So she had these other women she didn't necessarily need a family or a man. My mother had a lot of very conservative values, and I just couldn't fit into it. Not even one of them. Like I was many of the women she warned me about. You know,
isn't that interesting? Because we can be raised in that environment, and we're either going to mirror it or we're going to be completely the opposite of it.
Exactly. And you know what's so interesting is my mom is a badass, and she's even the woman that she warned me about. But it was her fear. You know, I think a lot of times mothers especially get so caught in this idea that they want to protect their children. They want to protect them from the things they don't understand or know about, that all of those things become, you know, it's like, yeah, don't step in the middle of the road. That's wise advice to give your kids. But, you know, when I started saying I wanted to travel, they were like, oh my God, there's people out there, like, you could get hurt. I'm like, you know, I could get hurt in my house. So I think it's fear. I think it's a lot of times fears that mothers have of the unknown for their kids, but yeah. You got to let them go.
You know? Yeah. If you don't let them go, then they become quite fucked up. I can attest to it. I know some people like that, that kept their kids too close to them into old age and fucked up. So we have in our show questions that you consider yourself a queen maker. So tell us about what inspired you to become a queen maker.
Well, you know, I am a queen maker, and that's part of why I'm the woman that people warn you about, because I just want to cut through the bullshit and the princess behavior in this world. I feel like part of the issue that women have is that we have not grown up. We are remaining the princesses in our lives. We're not responsible for our finances. We're looking to be rescued in a relationship. We're the victims of society or work or other friends. We don't know how to collaborate. We're still, you know, we're still burning each other at the stake. And, you know, when people work with me either as a coach or in a retreat, and everyone's like, I want to be a queen. I'm like, well, then you need to, a queen is the ruler of her sovereign state. And that means she's the ruler of her independent self. So you need to be the ruler of that, of yourself. You can't be blown about by every storm. So when I say queen maker, it's my hope, and I feel like it's my life's work to take away the excuses. And so I do run through, some of my clients are like, it was great working with you, got to go. Because, you know, and then there are women that have stepped into this divinity, this queenhood, and they've gone out and they're changing the world, because the queen doesn't only serve herself, she serves the world. And that's another problem. We've got analysis paralysis. We're so busy figuring out ourselves and our lives. I mean, I know so many women in their 40s and 50s who still don't have their shit together. It's like, come on, grow up. You're not a princess. That's the daughter of a king, and become the queen of your own life. And it's so exciting when you do too. And so, you know, that's to me the best part of the work, when I see a woman really reclaim her crown, trust her intuition, and go out and become a change agent in this world.
It's so funny. Just a few days ago, Rachel and I were having a conversation on Facebook about, I think Rachel said she was the queen, and I'm like, I'm also the queen, because who wants to be a princess? I mean, if you get the right king, maybe, but who wants to be a princess when the queen has the power?
But here's the thing, the princess is a child of the king. So she's not the equal of a king.
Yeah.
And so a lot of women love the idea of being rescued by a king, and then they're dissatisfied, or they're the look at me, I'm the shiny thing and I'm his princess. But then they wonder why he chooses down as she gets older. They're you know, petrified of aging, because then that king might want another princess.
Yeah.
You know, and then we don't even serve our men when we stay princesses. You know, we're not being, I would think it's got to be a drag to have to take care of your partner, you know, like, and I'm not, right?
Yeah, totally. The joke that I have with my husband is I am definitely a queen and have been for a long time. And I rule my nation with power. And the joke that I always make with my husband is, please let me be the princess. I just want to go home and like, just not do anything. But that's when I get tired and I don't want to have to rule the kingdom anymore.
Yeah.
And he's like, you can do that anytime you like. And he laughs because he knows that it never will happen. I'm like, pretty please, can I just sit at home and do nothing and look pretty? And he's like, anytime you choose, but
maybe we need to reframe it and just be like, the queen's taking a day off.
Yeah.
We need that, for God's sakes.
Exactly.
The queen's taking the day off.
Well, you know, even when you think about the earth, right? I mean, the ultimate queen, right? The Mother Earth, Gaia. I mean, she has winter every year. She goes within. She takes time to kind of nourish the pieces within her. And, you know, I feel that it's not about not nurturing one another or nourishing one another in partnership or even in collaboration with other queens, because queens need other queens, right? Like, we have all of our queendoms around and we need to collaborate in order for there to be peace and real vitality in this world. But, you know, when I think of a king and a queen, when you think of king and queens of ages ago, the king would wear a crown on his head. And the crown, right, men are logical, right? So they think with their mind, you know, they think with their logical mind, you know, they're coming from that place of, you know, the real, you know, real brainiac. So they're really coming from that place of logic. But queens used to wear this thing around their center. I don't know if you've seen medieval pictures where you'd see them bejeweled around the center with this draping going down in between their legs. And that was called a girdle. That was the original girdle. And the reason why a queen would wear that is because a queen trusted her intuition. She trusted her gut. So men ruled with the mind and the queen ruled with her intuition. And that was beautiful balance.
That's a great balance. Yeah.
Right. And so without the queen, we have people ruling this world only with the logic and, you know, with the mind, without the intuition and without saying, oh, is this good for the next generation? Is this good for my community? I don't know if that's the right thing. So we need queens to bring back balance, even planetarily. You know, that's why it's such a shit show out there.
I think we need a queen convention.
We do.
Well, and it's important too that women understand that we all get to be the queen. And I'm a huge like psycho Game of Thrones fan, and like the whole struggle of the whole thing is like the Queen Cersei and Queen Daenerys fighting over who gets to be the queen. And they end up like everybody is killing each other over this struggle of who gets to be the queen rather than just, and I think the analogy is that women tend to try to be better than one another or decide that she's doing good. So that means, you know, and that means I can't do good. And it's, you know, and tear each other down rather than understand, like you're saying, Liz, that we all get to be the queen if we so choose.
Yeah. And, you know, here's the thing too. We don't need to tear each other down, but we also need to honor that wound is ancient. You know, when women were being burned at the stake, it was them or their children or another woman. And they'd be like, oh, take the old hag over there, not me and my daughter. And I feel like we have to kind of heal those ancestral wounds on some level. And that's why I said my work is about being a queen maker, because it's time to heal it, get over it, get to your feet and get on with it so that we can make a better world for all of the women in this world. You know, the Western women have so much privilege, and yet we're still, you know, and we still don't have all the privilege, right? But around the world, the majority of women don't have the privileges that we do. And so my work with women is also about my philanthropic or my charitable work. I need more women to be queens in order for the good work to be done.
Well, can we talk about what you're doing with Durga International? Because that was one of the things that really got us interested in you, because that is such a, what you're doing is so important. So could you let our listeners know a little bit about what Durga is? And I don't want to give you a two-part question. So let's just start with what Durga is.
Well, Durga Tree International is a nonprofit that I formed in 2013 and became actually a 501c3 in 2014. And it really came out of a call to action. I owned a women's wellness center in North Jersey. I was coaching and selling products made by women around the world. And I actually thought I was doing my work. I just thought that was my philanthropy. That was my service. I had written a book about divorce. And so the wellness center was really where my heart was, with the service component of helping women through these products I was selling. And I received a call to action by a company that I was carrying their jewelry called Made by Survivors. It's now Her Future Coalition in Asia. And they were trying to build a shelter up in the northern region in India, where girls were going missing in a lot of the little villages because of the big tea houses closing down. And when I got on the phone and I spoke with Sarah, who is the founder of that organization, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait a minute. I know trafficking exists, human trafficking. And she, you know, we started talking about it and I was like, well, let's really call it what it is. It's modern slavery. And when I started to learn about the fact that the majority of people who are being trafficked or enslaved are women, I just felt like we really had to do something. And she needed $50,000. She needed it within a matter of months. And so sitting at my kitchen table with my husband, I was like, this is exciting. I'd love to raise money and know exactly where it's going. Not, you know, not give a $10,000 check and wonder what change happened there. So I called every woman and friend I had from the wellness center. I felt like the woman from Practical Magic, like calling the phone chain saying, let's have a lot of wine and cheese and let's make this happen. And we threw a gala and we did raise the money in a matter of 6 months. So wow. The shelter is built. It's still a shelter we sponsor. But from learning about it, I realized that human slavery, modern slavery was growing. It wasn't decreasing. And it was a disease of the impoverished woman and her children, predominantly, you know, the uneducated or indigenous woman around the world. And so I just felt compelled to create a nonprofit where we would collaborate with multiple organizations on the ground to come up with real solutions to remove people from the slavery cycle and make sure that their children, generationally, there was change. And that's really how Durga formed. The name Durga, a lot of people ask me about the name Durga. If you're familiar with Indian tradition, the Indian goddess with all the arms, she's one of the oldest maternal goddess legends around the world. She's been a favorite goddess archetype of mine. And she was created by 8 gods who wanted to eradicate evil, but they couldn't eradicate evil without the divine feminine. So they each took one of their arms. They created a goddess, of course. And they put her on the most badass animal in the jungle, which was a tiger. And she's the goddess that eradicates evil and limitation in the world, but also within ourselves, which again really resonated with my coaching work and the work I was doing with women here in the US and in Europe, which is we can't change the world. We can't end issues like slavery unless we continue to work on ourselves and we understand what enslaves us, what limits us, so that we can then go in turn and make some differences. Because charity brings out the crazy in so many people, you know, brings out, oh, I'm serving, I feel good about myself. But, you know, so it's Durga was a twofold intentional name for our work.
And what does Durga mean again?
Well, she's the goddess. So
Durga is the goddess.
She's the goddess. And then tree is the idea that, you know, as above, so below, like we're all interconnected in this world. So we all kind of are part of Mother Earth, you know, Durga Tree International. And so the other component of our work and a big component of the work that we do here in the United States is I hear a lot of times people go, well, you know, trafficking is happening here in the US. And I'm like, I'm very aware of that. And there are great organizations that are dealing with that. We partner with grassroots boots on the ground organizations globally. But how we choose them is based on the goods and services we receive here in the United States, because it's what I do here is I feel that we are responsible for the demand for trafficked goods based on our unconscious consumption of slave-made goods. So we have a conscious shopping guide on Durga's website. We really try to educate people about our interconnection to where things come from, how they come from, you know, who's making them, who's mining them. You can get a rose quartz crystal for love, but if it was mined by a child slave, I don't think the energy is going to be great there. So it's about, right? So it's about that interconnectivity. So I feel very committed in the US platform about raising awareness about conscious consumption demand and reducing the demand for slave-made goods by using our buying dollars to make different decisions on what we buy.
Interesting. I'm listening to an audiobook called The Urban Monk right now. And And he talks about that. That's a really good one too.
Yeah, I'm writing it down.
Yeah. And he goes into that about conscious consumption and deciding. He says, you know, whatever we buy is what we vote for. So we're voting for, you know, like you said, if you're purchasing a, even with the best intentions of a crystal that's going to be positive, that if it's coming from a negative source. But it's just so, it's very difficult. It's a difficult choice. I'm struggling with it. That's why I listen to multiple times to these kind of books, because I'm struggling with like how much work it seems like to figure out, you know, because you just kind of blindly in the world, like, let's face it, a lot of people don't think it through. I'm like, oh, I want to buy this, you know, I want to buy this pair of shoes, but are they being made by slaves? Like, how much more effort do we need to put into it? And would we actually be less restless for what we're doing in this world if we did take that time? Because that's the bottom line, is like the restlessness of, are these shoes that I'm ordering from Zappos going to fulfill me?
Like, thank
you. Maybe they're not, because the source is wrong.
Right. And think about it. Many of us are really beginning to understand about quantum law and our interconnection, right? Energy. And then we don't think about what we're putting on our bodies, where it's coming from. Also, wherever there is a human rights violation, such as slavery, you can bet there is an environmental right violation and an animal right violation. They all go hand in hand. So when we're unconsciously consuming, you know, I heard somebody say, what we consume consumes us. And so we think of that as just food, but it's what we read, it's what we listen to, it's what we wear, it's what drives us. And so I think so many people are feeling this sense of lack because we're not stopping and thinking, what am I going to get out of this? I do the same thing. And, you know, I always tell people, you don't have to do it perfectly, but if we all did something, we would do, you know, we wouldn't be doing no thing. It's sort of like recycling. We don't have to do it perfectly, but the fact that we're all doing it now is why it's in, why we see recycling bins in airports and in coffee shops.
Right.
30 years ago, you know, when I was in my 20s, I didn't see that, but we're all beginning to do it. And, you know, I had a great advisory board member say, Beth, I love that we're, you know, supporting all these programs and these survivors. She said, but how will we ever move the needle on slavery? Reducing it. She goes, because I can't relate to the sex trafficking demand. I'm not going to buy somebody that way. And it, for me, it was so clear. I was like, well, we can use our buying dollars to demand that companies do the right thing. So it's not about just being, you know, boycotting companies. It's about creating courageous conversations and saying, yeah, Walmart or a place like that is really convenient for me, but I need you to do better so that I can feel good about shopping there. It's about having an understanding and making small, daily, different decisions. And that's why we created the guide, because we wanted to try and make it easier for people.
Hey, Warners, this is Gina Tremarco. And if you know Rachel and I, you know how much we love our beauty strategies, especially DermaVogue, where we both go to keep our faces looking younger and healthier. Every time someone says to me, something looks different about your face, I can't help but to tell them that the DermaVogue team, led by Dr. James Turek, has been offering the greater Myrtle Beach area the best in cosmetic and aesthetic dermatology since 2003. DermaVogue combines expert medical knowledge with cutting-edge technology, bringing their patients the most effective, flawless solutions to any skincare or cosmetic need. Some of the services to consider include Botox, skin peels, facials, Bio-T, and much more. I personally love and highly recommend their Botox and lip injections for making my face look younger and healthier, and for Bio-T for improving my energy, sleep, and weight control. At DermaVogue, they gauge you in the process of total body health to ensure your satisfaction with their comprehensive selection of the most up-to-date, non-invasive cosmetic dermatology and spa treatments. If you want to look and feel your best, DermaVogue can help you get there. Schedule your consultation today by calling 843-357-2444 or visit DermaVogue.com and tell them that the Women Your Mother Warned You About sent you.
You know, at the end of the day, it's so much about leadership and stepping up. And there is, I think, a smaller percentage of people who are willing to go out there and take the steps that other people are afraid to take or don't know how to take or think they're going to be judged to take. I think Rachel and I can both speak to this, that we're the type of human beings that we will do stuff that other people won't do. And we might be criticized sometimes, but then people start going, oh, they wait, you know, someone's got to be the pioneer that yeah. starts the movement.
Exactly. You two are queens. And so what happens is princesses look up to queens. I mean, that's how it should be. And so that kind of beautiful, strong, fierce, but loving leadership is needed, especially among women. You know, we don't need to be men to be powerful. We don't need to act like men to be powerful leaders. We need to act like fierce, kind, loving, clear women who are willing to go out there. And you know, even in this movement, I just feel like I can't sit in my house and my abundant life. If you are able to listen to this podcast, you are more abundant than most of the women that I serve. And so, you know, starting with just gratitude and kind of having an understanding of your blessings, but then thinking, what's the one thing I could do? Like, how many pairs of leggings do I need? How much stuff do I need? And would that then make me more abundant financially, where then I had more options and more choices for more joy in my life? So there's just all these like components to it.
Well, there's definitely a trickle down effect to all of that.
Yeah, exactly.
You got something?
Go ahead. I just know we have some other things we want to get to with her. No,
yeah, I know. You know, if you got something to go.
Who? I want to hear about your rising from the ashes of divorce, because I joke about writing a book called How to Get Married and Divorced and Married and Divorced and Married, because that's where I'm at too. And Tina actually was like, ooh, that sounds like a good book. You should write it.
You should. We need more good divorce books.
Well, and there's ways to do it well, is what I did. Right. The first time I did it terrible. The second time I did it well, I learned, you know.
Exactly. Well, for me, the first time was a fluke. I mean, honestly, I was married and divorced in a matter of like 3 months. You know, I married my high school sweetheart because, you know, I was shit all over. Like, you guys should be getting engaged. You should be getting married. And we were both like, oh, okay. And then when we were like, who are you? You know, we didn't even know each other. So sometimes I don't even think of that as a marriage, but it was. And it was a relationship that I ended and got into the marriage with my second husband. And, you know, I don't know if I did it well. I am really proud of how I did it for my children. And one of the most powerful things that happened to me during that experience was I had an amazing therapist and coach. It's what's led me to become a coach. She took away all my bullshit excuses and said, okay, Beth, like, I've heard your story. Now, what are you learning from it? And so from that whole process, I feel like I'm so thankful for those two experiences, because I wouldn't be the woman I am. I wouldn't be doing the work I'm doing without them. And I had just volunteered to, you know, do like a 2-hour workshop for a church divorce group. And it turned into an 8-week program that I taught for several years. And that 8-week program is Rising from the Ashes of Divorce. And it could be rising from any situation, but it is about, again, taking personal responsibility for why you got into a relationship, what went wrong, no more finger pointing and blaming. How are you going to learn about your values and your passions, forgiveness, and live your best life? Because when you're a victim of somebody else, unfortunately, you can't make any changes, right?
Yeah. The blame game is a big deal in divorce. Yeah. And wow. I learned it. My first divorce was a result of domestic abuse, and I escaped it in somewhat dramatic fashion. And I had great therapy. And the best thing I learned from that was, it's not his fault, really. It's two people in a relationship. And I learned it was really important for me. I think he's not really a great human, but I think that's because of where he came from. Like, it's very clear. But I took responsibility for the fact that, you know, I saw that coming. I saw it coming, and I stuck around for it. Mm-hmm. And then when he beat the shit out of me, I stuck around. So, you know, that's the thing that you have to, one must accept full responsibility. And for my second marriage as well, like I saw it coming for 10 years and I established a platform for all of the behavior to be okay.
Yeah.
And it was more like Peter Pan kind of thing, but you know, you establish that it's okay. So it's a dangerous game that people fall into that creates misery for their children and for themselves when they point the finger rather than just go, okay, this is what was, and this is how I'm going to make the pathway forward.
And, you know, and two, the thing is we write our contracts and relationships very early on. And so, you know, it was fascinating for me when I would ask people to go back to when they were dating and, you know, I'm like, all the signs were there and you still signed up for the crazy train. Yeah. And, you know, so then to blame somebody, then you'd have no ability to change. And I always say, when you're pointing the finger, there's three pointing back at you, you know, so you've really got to do that internal work. But I think even for children, the thing that upsets me the most is you created, unless it came out of a horrific situation, and I have seen 11-year-old girls have babies in Latin America and love their babies, and they had them because they were trafficked, okay? So if you make children with somebody that you loved, whether it was a hot mess or what have you, when you make it about you after that divorce, solely about you, you are making those children a mistake. And you are taking away, you are actually taking the best thing that you did do in a relationship and making it the worst thing, especially for those kids. Yeah. And I have just witnessed the train wreck that people wreak on their children because they belittle and they talk badly about a spouse that they loved and made those children with. And then those children have to hear that. It's
horrible.
It's a horrible,
horrible mistake. And when I divorced my daughter's father, I remember I made this conscious, and I'll never forget the vision that I had of, like, I made the conscious choice that I would take whatever he threw at me and I would walk through. It was like a vision of walking through this rocky terrain with this horrible storm going on around me. And I decided I will walk with grace like a queen through this storm, no matter what comes at me, because on the other side of it, when my child, if my child ends up in the hospital, you know, and we're over the hospital bed together over this child, or when my child gets married, I don't want he and I to be an enemy. Yeah. Of each other. She gets that. And, you know, I'm sure I'll be able to fuck my child up in many other ways in life, but in that way, she understands that I don't hate her dad. We get along. We are a team raising her, but we just have decided that we're better off not being a team in the same house, you know?
Bravo to you. I mean, I wish I want women to really hear that, because it's also such it's a queen action. So it's so empowering to take that direction. It's so disempowering to take the other direction. And I can tell you, I did the same thing with my kids. Me and my ex-husband, as fucked up as our relationship was, we looked at each other and we said, our best assets are our two children and we share them. So, I mean, those are our strongest assets. And we went through a situation when I was newly married, and I think it was about me being newly married too, that was hard for my kids. And it was maybe 6 months, and I saw how terrible it was for my kids. And so since then, we've always done everything we can. I mean, my ex-husband is still a part of our family because he's my mm-hmm. children's father. So, you know, again, I think that you do have to become the queen or the ruler of your sovereign state. And so when you're a victim, and you're not doing any of your own healing, of course, it's easy to blame somebody else. But then you're guarding an empty jail cell anyway. That person's out living their life, you know.
Yeah, so. I think part of being a queen is being okay with somebody calling you the bitch. That was a big part of it. I knew that my daughter's dad was going to be mad. And we know this sometimes when we make hard choices, that somebody out there is going to be calling us the bitch. So like at that point, I was like, it's okay. You can call me all the names in the book. And on the other side of things, this is how it's going to be. And it's exactly how it is. And I think we have to make that choice as women sometimes to decide, like Gina was saying, sometimes to make change and huge impact, you have to be okay with somebody calling you crazy, calling you the bitch, and not being comfortable with your behavior that's outside of their box of normal. Mm-hmm. And just know what the end goal that you see in your mind is, and be willing to take the heat.
Amy, I have to tell you, you ladies are speaking my language. And that mm-hmm. and that even goes for my nonprofit. You know, to be the director of a nonprofit and to also stand in integrity in what we believe, we've had to make pivots and changes even within the model of the work we do, because I always wanted it to, ultimately, the people that I feel I'm serving are the women that I'm serving to remain forever free. And so if I, you know, in this world, you know, people love putting a Band-Aid on a problem and feeling good about going down and taking care of little kids. And I just, you know, and I've had to say, that's not the mission. That's not, you know, it's not about us. It's not about how we feel. Yes, I love that you're of service, but I've had to make really hard decisions, and it hasn't been a popularity contest sometimes, but I feel that when you stay in your integrity and you're coming from a place of love, ultimately, it's not about not loving the community that I'm working with, but it's about truly coming from a place of love of who we serve. I've had to take those hits and bring it on. I mean, it's just, I think going through my divorce, becoming the queen of my life, embracing my inner bitch has just given me a strength to do that with a level of autonomy and grace sometimes.
Do they call that maturity? Is that what they call that?
Yeah.
I think I'm working on that.
Me too.
Well, hey, it's always a work in progress, right? Like I think that's the other thing that people don't realize when they look at women like us and they form their perceptions of us. They don't realize that you have to be a constant work in progress, and you have to have some level of humility and vulnerability that you're not perfect. And sometimes people see you in a powerful way of, oh, look at them, they're all that. And meanwhile, sometimes you're just a big ass hot mess inside, just trying to make it through the day and keep your crown on straight.
Oh, amen. And I think that that's the other thing too. I think what happens when women aren't places of power, they're held to a standard that we don't hold other people to. Yes, and they're human yes. beings doing just the best, you know, they're doing just the best that they can with the tools that they have. You know, once you know better, you do better. But even when you know better, some days, you know, the queen wants to just take the day off. And if she makes a mistake, she makes a mistake. So I think that, you know, it's also about holding yourself to a standard where you can forgive yourself, where you can love on yourself. Because ultimately, that, you know, you have to be good and right with yourself first. You know, when you're trying to make it right for everybody else, and then you're not right with yourself, it becomes, you know, that's, I think, when you start to unravel and really go off course.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about some of the other work that you're doing with women? I know that you have a philosophy of empowered women, empower women.
Yeah. So all of my work is around women embracing their divinity and living their best lives so that they can go out, obviously, and have a kick-ass personal life, but become change agents in this world. So I do workshops and retreats. I'm actually doing a virtual winter solstice kind of community, a refresh and renew class online in December. I have a shop in the Lake George region where we have aromatherapy, we have angels, it's just a beautiful, nourishing place to kind of come and reset. I speak and still give lectures all over about conscious consumerism, bitchcraft. People can hire me to do that work. So that's what that's still my passion and my love. I just created an aromatherapy line. We're going back to the 90s again, but it's a tool for creating sacred space in your home. And so people are always asking me to make these blends, and anything that I do in my Beth Tiger brand, a portion of the profit goes to Durga. So it's another way that I can personally fund the work that I do without constant fundraising. So it's kind of an exciting piece. So it's again, it's full circle. It's still connected to my charitable work abroad.
That's pretty awesome. It's, you know, having that responsibility to take care of the world and still make a living.
And it's not always easy, right? So it's finding that balance, you know, taking care of my family, taking care of myself. I do believe that, you know, one of my mantras every day is, you know, thank you for the gift of money and time to help me to live a kick-ass personal life. I mean, I don't think that we have to be martyrs anymore to be change agents. I don't think, you know, we can have great relationships. We can do fun things and we can still work hard and be of service. You know, I love my work, so I don't even think of it as working hard.
Yeah. We have really flown by. We have really flown by in this interview with you.
I think we could talk all day.
We could talk all day.
Alas, we don't. None of us have that time.
I know.
We have some signature closing questions that we'd love to throw your way. Since this is the podcast that makes everything sexy again, how do you define the word sexy?
Okay, so how do I define sexy? Well, I think of sexy as being really good in your skin. Just really knowing oneself, being comfortable, you know, being comfortable with your body and embracing your own embracing your own sexuality. I often kind of change that word. I always say some women are sexy, but they're not sexual. And I would love for them to be sexual because that would be truly sexy. And what I mean by sexual is not just the idea of the act itself. We are creative beings. Creativity is part of our sexuality. It's really sexy to be creating, to be in your skin, to just be embracing yourself as the woman that you are, whether you're, you know, a size 20, a size 2, just really working on being in your skin. That's very sexy. When I see a woman who's, you know, just into herself and kind of just what she's wearing and what she's doing is something that she feels good in, that to me is very sexy.
Hot. And what is the best advice you've been given by another woman or a man?
Let's see. I've been given some great advice. From my mother. My mother, I would say some of her tips has always been to take time to connect with the divine every single day, to stop and take some time for yourself every single day so that you can be the best person. You have to refuel the well, you have to refill the well in order to go out and to give. So it's okay to take that time to nourish yourself. So that is definitely been great advice. I received amazing advice from a woman who's a nun, not a nun, sorry, she's a priest. She's a badass. And she said to me, Beth, when you're doing great things, the wolf will be at the door. You don't have to open the door for the wolf. but she basically let me know that it's not going to be easy to step into a leadership role, that, you know, there will be people and situations out there that'll try and malign you. Stay within your integrity. Check in with yourself. If you're doing it because it's coming from a place of love, then just keep doing it and don't open the door for the wolf.
I love that. I like literally had a visual as you were saying that.
Yeah.
When you're doing great things, there's a wolf at the door.
And then I would say my final advice is this in terms of service. You know, it's the legend of the starfish, and many people have heard it, but I think that we can all be reminded that, you know, it's quality over quantity. And, you know, the legend is there's a little girl and she's walking with her grandfather and she starts throwing their starfish on the, you know, on the shoreline, and she starts throwing them in the ocean. And the grandfather says, hey, you're not going to be able to save all of them. And she's holding a starfish in her hand and she says, but I can save this one. And, you know, I've often thought, every life matters. My life matters. So if I'm serving somebody and it's one person and I can affect change in one person, it matters. So simple acts of kindness every day matter. We don't have to do these big, epic things to be change agents in this world.
It's like that 1%, right? That becomes a multiplier, the multiplier effect.
Exactly.
Awesome. Any advice you wish that you had been given?
Don't stay a princess for too long, Beth. Grow the hell up. I wish there was a ceremony from princess to queen. So, you know, let's do a queen conference. We need a queen conference.
No, I'm serious. And you could actually do a ceremony like that. I just had all these visuals of that's part of it. And you literally have Have you?
I've done that. Yes. In my retreats, every woman crowns and we crown each other. So every woman is crowning the other woman at the end of the retreat.
Are you taking it from princess to queen?
To queen. Yeah, they're reclaiming. Well, and they're reclaiming their crown. Every woman has it in them. They just reclaim it. Yeah. So stay tuned. Maybe I'll do that in 2020 Queen Conference.
I think I'm gonna go buy me a crown and just wear it around.
Forget the tiara. Now I want.
I wear the girdle. And I wear
the girdle.
I wear the thing around my waist. That's why I love great belts and scarves and things around my waist.
A crazy side note before we wrap this up. Have either one of you watched The Crown on Netflix?
Oh, you know what? We're talking a few things we've heard twice. I just asked my husband about that last night and said, didn't you tell me I should watch that? And he was like, yeah. And so did Katie, our daughter. And I'm like, oh, I've got to watch that.
It's amazing because it's really the story of Queen Elizabeth. And the story is just amazing to see how, you know, she became queen and she really wasn't born to be queen, but because her father became king, but he wasn't born to be king. And everything that she deals with in being a queen and everything that, she's been queen for how long? 60 years?
And think of all that she has seen. I think really when you think of an actual queen role model, she's probably it, isn't she?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really great, I highly recommend it because the history of it behind it is great, but it's a really great story of how this woman really has transcended over 60 years in a role that was really not so traditional for women.
That's so cool.
Interesting.
I just binged it, the new season, so I just watched all the episodes.
I love that.
Beth, it has been awesome having you with us.
You too.
To have us here, be with us today. We really appreciate it. And if people want to connect with you or learn more about you or Durga, what are the best ways to do that?
Well, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, Beth Tiger and Durga Tree International. It's D-U-R-G-A, Tree International. But also BethTiger.com, and that will link you to the charity as well, or DurgaTreeInternational.org. So you can sign up for our newsletters. We only send them once a month. I do not, it's just not my thing. I'm too busy. I'm not hounding people with daily emails, but you know, we keep in touch with people. We let people know exactly our community, what we're doing at Durga and even with Beth Tiger.
And some of the workshops that women can participate in, do you have some of those scheduled? Are they on your website?
They are. I'm going to be, so there's one coming up in February around rising from the ashes of divorce. And then the refresh and refuel one for December is on there and people can sign up right on the website.
When is it in December?
It's December 11th. And it's a webinar. So it's, so everyone can join. It's a virtual community, but there's going to be some things that everyone gets ahead of time and all the women can stay in touch together.
Cool. So awesome. Yeah. Again, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies, for doing what you're doing. You're featuring great women doing cool stuff, and we need more of that. So thank you so much.
Yes, we need some bigger crowns now. Yeah, it's been awesome, and we've met some amazing women. Are you showing us your crown?
No, I'm showing you the queens.
I love it.
So the 12 disciples. The 12 disciples. So they're the 12 queens.
Very, that is cool. Well, put two more queens on there. Put Rachel and I on there.
Absolutely.
Well, it's time for us to wrap up. Thanks again to Beth. And thanks to all of our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. And to our sponsor, Dermavogue. the place that makes Rachel and I prettier than we already are. Special shout out to Dr. Jim Turek for doing that. To connect with me directly or learn more about Pivot 10 results and Carolina Improv, you can find me on our website at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com or ginatremarco.com.
And to connect with me, Rachel Pitts, you can find me all over social media as Rachel on Real Estate or connect with me directly at rachelmtg.com. And to find all our social media links and free downloads, free cool stuff on our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
And, you know, we always like to ask, hey, give us a rating and review, because the more rating and reviews we get, the more visibility we get, the more amazing people we get on the show. So check that out on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant. And a little irreverence, too, right?
Sure, a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
That's my bad. Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, don't. It doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.